From iAfrican Media, this is iAfrican Bites, a podcast that features commentary on African news, insights, opinions, and analysis with tech industry leaders and professionals. The podcasts are from interviews conducted by the iAfrican team, whether at events or when needed for commentary. I'm Badawun Kosokwane, host and editor-in-chief for iAfrican.com, spelled www.iafrican.com.
At the University of Ghana, at the Deep Learning in Durban, day two.
We start on day zero.
Okay, so the first day is day zero, then it's day one.
Yeah.
Oh, because I was having an argument with my production whether it's day two, day three. But how are you?
I'm doing well, okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Kathleen, walk us through your journey to working in natural language processing. What was the journey?
So I studied math and computer science for my undergraduate. Uh-huh. And I really enjoyed the computer science units and struggled a lot with the math. Uh-huh. And because of this struggle, I decided that I wanted to definitely use the math in my final year project.
Okay.
So I discovered the field of data science because the two fields are used in equal measure.
Uh-huh.
And I really enjoyed working on the final year project.
Uh-huh.
And this made me decide that when I went into my career, I wanted to work as a data scientist.
Uh-huh.
And so I did. After finishing school, I signed up to all the meetups in Nairobi that were bringing together data scientists. I would go listen to the presentations and then would make it a point to speak to the speakers after their sessions. This led to me getting my first job. 100%. I convinced one startup that they should give me a chance.
Yes.
And I was their first data hire.
Yes.
So at an organization known as Africa's Talking.
Okay.
They were very supportive of the fact that I wasn't trained as a data scientist.
Okay.
And so supported my learning journey by paying for me to attend conferences.
Beautiful.
But they also supported me in organizing the Women in Machine Learning and Data Science community in Nairobi.
In Nairobi.
So I continued to grow my skills in the space and interacted with many more communities. So from WIMLs, I became aware of Data Science Africa.
Yes.
And then the Deep Learning Indaba.
Yes.
So I attended the Indaba in 2017.
Okay, the one in
place. Yes.
Yes.
And then I'd say everything just followed.
Okay.
As for my interest in NLP, the company I first worked for is in the telco space.
Okay.
So our products are like SMS, USSD, voice. And in an election year in Kenya, we had to think about what technical solutions we can implement to screen messages. Because what typically happens in Kenya in an election year is that we're split along tribal lines and insightful and, you know, hateful messages can be sent and have been sent via text messaging. So I quickly realized that some of the cool things which I played around with on the community end in terms of NLP were not applicable in this space. And it's simply because when we're proof of concepting or preparing presentations for the community, we're mostly working in English.
Beautiful.
But in this real world solution, I needed to work in the local languages spoken in Kenya.
Which is Swahili.
Well, Kiswahili is a national language, and it is the mother tongue of some Kenyans, but not for many of us.
Oh.
So my mother tongue is, I come from a tribe known as the Luhya, and we have about 18 dialects of this language.
Ooh.
So most Kenyans have their mother tongue and also speak Kiswahili, which is a national language, and then English as well.
Let's keep it there with Kiswahili. I mean, you do a lot of work with the Kiswahili Common Voice data set.
Yeah.
What is the significance and the impact of working on this Kiswahili Common Voice dataset and its accessibility for AI machine learning in this regard? Why was it such an important field for you to do?
So it is significant because Kiswahili is quite widely spoken.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the most widely spoken African language. Mm-hmm. And in Africa, many of our languages are oral. So when it comes to the representation in terms of text data, you'll find that it's hardly available. I was recently looking at some statistics and I found that on Wikipedia, there's 7,500 articles available for Kiswahili. In
only
contrast, 7, only 7,000.
That's low.
And this is in that's contrast really to a language like Swedish, mm-hmm. which is spoken by 13 million people, and it has 300,000 mm-hmm. articles available on okay. Wikipedia. So there's a huge imbalance between what digital data is available and the number of speakers that speak these languages. And I think this is why this work is significant, because there's a large population of individuals who should be served by tools such as these, but then they currently are not.
So how do you gather this voice data set in Kiswahili? What, like, walk me through it. What are you going to villages, recording people, speaking it? Like, how do you gather all this data?
So I'll walk you first through how the Common Voice platform is okay. set up, and then how we use it to gather data. There's several tasks that you can do. First is to create sentences or text data. Uh-huh. Then we have a validation step for all the content that is uploaded, so the text. Then once we have texts, individuals can come and read these sentences and then record themselves reading these sentences. Okay. Then we have a validation step for audios to be validated. Okay. So you can come and listen to an audio and then give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Okay.
So in terms of how we create the data with the texts, we've tried to reach out to partners who are already creating texts.
Okay.
What that has looked like is working with networks of writers. Okay. So we have writing competitions.
Okay.
People write stories or essays and then submit them.
This is with general citizens, not like an academic sort of exercise or anything like that.
Well, we have worked with universities, but also with general citizens. We invite anyone who is interested in anyone who's interested in creating text in Kiswahili.
In Kiswahili.
Yeah. So we get the text from them, validate them, and have them put on the Common Voice platform. And then we've also had a lot of community events where we now collect voice.
Okay.
And this has involved going to different parts of the country, not only in Kenya, but in Tanzania and the DRC, because these are also Kiswahili-speaking countries or regions. So the idea here is to cover as much as we can in terms of accent, because people will sound different depending on whether they've spent most of their lives in Nairobi or 100%. Mombasa or, you know, Dar es Salaam, which is in Tanzania, or in Lubumbashi, which is in the DRC.
Oh.
And it's very important to have all of this diversity captured in the data set so that we're able to build models and tools that serve people equally.
But Kathleen, one could argue, right, that, so let's say, for example, English. English is a language of business.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of investment. There's a lot of money that has facilitated economic transactions through English. What's the incentive of doing this in Kiswahili? And I'm trying to ascertain the monetization aspect of it. Is there a financial incentive? Does it make sense? Or is it just purely a cultural preservation of the language along those lines?
Where Kiswahili is concerned, it's beyond cultural preservation. So depending on the context, if you go to Tanzania, it's very much a Kiswahili-driven ecosystem, right? In interacting with some of the writers who come from Tanzania, they speak about the choice of English being something that would impact them negatively because you're basically picking a very narrow market because there the readers want Kiswahili content.
Okay.
And this is different in Kenya. We're very Anglophone. So the writers in Kenya will speak about writing in Kiswahili being an act of activism because they're picking a small market.
Yes.
So to a great extent, it is a language of business. And there is also an element of cultural preservation.
Okay.
So something we don't speak so much about is the fact that Kiswahili has related dialects and the growth of the standardized Kiswahili has actually been negatively impacting some of these dialects, right? Because it's their mother tongue. This is what they speak at home. But then we all enter the classroom and then we are taught standard Kiswahili, which leads to some of these native speakers now being told, okay, your pronunciation is incorrect. You should actually be speaking this. But the truth is, much more complex, right? So in our work, we have also been intentional about creating subsets of the data sets that are representative of some of these smaller dialects because we want that diversity to be captured and we want to be able to evaluate our models to see whether they perform as well for speakers of these small dialects as compared to speakers of standard Kiswahili like myself. So it's a balance of both. And then coming to smaller languages spoken across Africa, I think cultural preservation is the primary entry point, because you are right, many of us walk into formal spaces and the language of operation is English. When I started doing this work, I very quickly realized that I can't speak about AI in Kiswahili. And that's something I've had to practice over the past 2 years. But I just couldn't. I didn't have the vocabulary, despite the fact that all this knowledge exists in my head. But it's in English.
Kathleen, the role of open source initiatives and tools in advancing NLPs and generally also just general AI, specifically when you look at the good work you're doing with underrepresented language, what value does open source tools and initiative, how does it make your life easier?
So thinking about open source, I like the idea that work that I have done can mean that somebody else does not have to reinvent the wheel.
Okay.
Right. So going back to the example of the post-election year and me not having access to any tools or any data, I want that somebody who finds themselves in that position in, you know, next year or five years from now has somewhere to start, because I've built some data or I've built some models or tools that they can leverage. So that's one element of it. And I've been greatly inspired by some of the work that has been presented at the INDABA this year to just see that there's a lot more data sets being built, and especially data sets about technical concepts in AI and in ML. It means that another student undertaking a master's or a PhD project doesn't have to do the work of creating data sets. And I think this is extremely important. But as our community grows, we then start to interrogate more deeply because we primarily build some of these things for research. And I see a lot of merit in them remaining open for research. But then the truth is that there is value in them beyond the research. And in terms
for commercialization
of
commercialization now,
there's economic benefits to be reaped. And unfortunately, we are not best placed to reap these benefits in terms of compute or in terms of skills. And so I then start to ask myself, is open source the best way to go?
To go about,
But I don't have a response for it.
But doesn't it make the cost of it much cheaper, though? The exercise, that is, that you're currently doing, and at a later stage, we can then look into much more, you know, ecosystem tools or whatever.
It does make the cost of it much cheaper, but it also does this for players who have the money and could 100%. And should be paying these communities to do the work.
100%.
So the thing I find it difficult to reconcile is that we might crowdsource this data and tell people that we're primarily doing this for cultural preservation, but then somebody else will monetize it and build a product and come and sell it back to these same communities, right? And in interacting with the communities, many of them will ask you, what do I get out of it?
Yes.
Because how do we incentivize them to participate? Yes. If we're not paying them and we're telling them it's for digital, it's for goods.
Yes.
Right? This is true.
Yes.
But then there is value being ripped. 100%. It's just by somebody
just
else.
By somebody else.
Who's not interested in bringing the value back to to the contributors.
Okay. So let's take it back to deep learning and DABA. You said something very, very important. The deep learning in DABA allows you to sort of gather information, gather other data sets from across the country that can inform this body of knowledge that you put in your voice data set. Now, what is the value? I'm trying to ascertain the level of data that you derive from specifically deep learning in DABA. How has that made your life easier? And I'm thinking also the data you provide to other colleagues and peers on the continent.
So where the INDABA is concerned, I wouldn't focus on the data. I'd focus on the communities.
On the communities, right? 100%.
And since the beginning, we've seen a growth in this community. So in the first INDABA, a lot of the program was focused on foundational concepts. And we actually had one single track, right? Because there weren't enough people interested in some of the niche areas within the field. But as the community has grown, it means now there's individuals who are interested in specifically natural language processing, and they're organizing around that. It means there's a community that's interested in computer vision, and they're organizing around that. And now, 5 years later, we have this INDABA, which has literally several tracks that caters to a diverse group of people, right? And in each single track, I think we now see that the critical mass has led to us building specialized skills, and that means we're building better data sets, but we're also building the skills, the capacity of individuals who can take these data sets and use them to build the things that we need built in this ecosystem.
The deep learning DAWA is 7 years now. What sticks out? I mean, you were there from 2017. What sticks out for you? I mean, when you look at the growth, what really sticks out? Like, okay, I never thought that it would get to this level, or like, what really sticks out?
I think what sticks out for me is that it has grown beyond South Africa.
Okay.
So I'll share that the first time I came to attend the deep learning in DAWA was my first time coming to South Africa. Okay. And in history books and just from listening to the news, I'm aware that there's a white population in South Africa.
Yes.
And this is similar in Kenya.
Okay.
We have a white settler population in Kenya. But nothing prepared me for the fact that I walked into this event and I was like, wait, am I in SA? It felt very white.
So
I will say growth for me is the fact that we're in Ghana.
Okay.
And we have, I think, majority of the participation just being from Ghana. And people from neighboring countries.
100%.
And so I think this growth in representation is something that I'm very proud of.
The diversity in representation.
Yes.
And I think also as a female as well, we had a conversation with the event organizer, and he was saying the female proportionality was really important to have a lot of women. Let's talk about women, your initiative, Women in Machine Learning and Data Science.
Okay.
Was that started by, you started the chapter in Nairobi?
I started it with a couple of other individuals.
Okay, walk us through what's the sort of objective and mandate with that, because you guys had a very beautiful social party.
I know the parties in Ghana are really nice.
So I mean, what's the mandate with that?
So the Women in Machine Learning and Data Science, it's a global organization, and it provides a platform for local chapters to be created in different cities or in different countries. So I was involved in setting up the Nairobi chapter.
Okay.
And I would say that the aim of this organization is to create a platform for women to explore the field of AI broadly, or machine learning and data science broadly, and second, to build their own skills in this field and then potentially port into the field if they would like.
Okay. Now, you work for Mozilla Foundation, right?
I do.
What work do you do at Mozilla Foundation, and where does Mozilla fit in with the community that is deep learning in DAWA?
So at Mozilla Foundation, I'm doing a machine learning fellowship.
Okay.
I am specifically working on this project known as Common Voice.
Common Voice.
And Common Voice is this platform and this data set that is building speech recognition data. So on Common Voice, we have very many languages, and Kiswahili is one of them.
One of them.
100%. So in the past, I would say 5 years, Mozilla has been very intent on working with the African ecosystem. And so they've been intentional about supporting like the Kiswahili, the building of Kiswahili data, in addition to Kenya, Rwanda, Luganda, and increasingly there's more African languages represented. In terms of how Mozilla fits into this ecosystem, I think that we have only started to create more overlap between the communities. So in the past 2 years, I've interacted with the Mozilla ecosystem, and it's great to see that there is alignment in that we're all working in data. But what Mozilla has done very well, what Mozilla Foundation has done very well in the past, what they've done very well is to bring together artists and activists and journalists,
100%.
All who work in data and have taken the role of interrogating how data is used to build technology, right? So we have this aim of making the internet a better place. And interacting with that community, I see that we are aligned in wanting to build a better future on the internet, using technology, but they really have not been a space for the technical community that is the deep learning in DAWA. I'm hoping to see this change and working to see this change in the future. Mozilla Foundation is a funder. I'd love to see a lot more of that money come into this ecosystem 100%. And fund technical work. I'd also like for more of this technical community to have access to the spaces that Mozilla Foundation is creating, because it's really helped me to grow as an individual, that I interact with people on my team who, when I say, let's build a technical solution, they tell me, okay, Kathleen, let's ask ourselves, is technology the thing we should be building, right? Because these guys are like, we're the social scientists, yes. We're the artists.
Yes.
Maybe we should just hire more people, yes. And the system will be more efficient, yes. You know? So I'd like more of this technical community to, yes, interact with that kind of thinking, and mm-hmm. I think it leads to positive growth.
Okay. Yeah. Let's look at the continent more broadly. You are the regional coordinator for the AI for development in Africa.
I was.
Oh, you was. Okay.
I no longer am.
Okay, but now let's draw from those experiences, right? Mm-hmm. What key insights and trends during that tenure did you pick up in terms of development in AI machine learning on the continent?
Okay. So it's been a number of years since I was in this role. Mm-hmm. And I worked on the initiative, the AI4D initiative, okay, very early on in its life.
Okay.
At this point, the funders, so it's funded by the IDRC, which, okay, is the International Development Research Center,
okay,
and SIDA, which is the Swedish... I don't remember what this acronym stands for.
Oh, your funders are going to be mad.
But what they knew is that they had a pot of funding, okay, and they wanted to invest it in AI in Africa.
In Africa, yeah.
But they did not have people on the ground, okay, and they had little awareness of what communities in Africa were building, mm-hmm, if at all. Mm-hmm. So in my time working with them, my role was really just to build bridges.
To build the community, basically, in order to inform the...
No, the community has existed, okay, and existed pre-AI4D. Mm. I think it was just a matter of figuring out how all the communities can get access to, yes, this funding.
Yes.
Right? So what grant programs can, mm-hmm, we create and curate? What are people working on? And what should the funders fund? Mm-hmm. Right? So it was a lot of ecosystem mapping to find out what communities are interested in building, mm-hmm, what they are building. And then that led to us creating grant programs for people to apply for funding to 100%. Continue doing their work.
100%.
Yeah. So I will stop there.
Kathleen, as trustee, mm-hmm, how can individuals and organizations that want to be involved with deep learning in Indaba, how do they go about doing that?
I think that, well, the Indaba is a very open organization. It's volunteer driven, which means that if you come in and you have an idea and you have the capacity to drive this idea, you can get very far. And so we're very open to individuals who have ideas and, mm-hmm, are willing to organize around it. I think the best way to interact with us is to first be part of the community,
okay,
and then start speaking about what it is you want to do and get, okay, people around you.
So how do I go about doing that? Do I go on the website? Do I join, go to Indaba X event? How do I become, and it could be either for a volunteer, mm-hmm, for research purpose, or even for a sponsor.
Okay. I think that Indaba X events are a great way to, okay, get into this community. They are also a pathway to the main event, which is, mm-hmm, the Deep Learning Indaba. And within this, we've also experimented with several other things,
okay,
right? So we've had a grand challenge, which, okay, was another way for us to interact with this community.
Okay.
But I'll go back to saying I think the Indaba X programs are the best way,
okay,
because we really want to see that local leadership grow. And then for the main events to just be a platform for us to showcase what everybody is doing, mm-hmm, in their local context.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kathleen, thank you so much for joining us on iAfrican.com.
Thank you for having me.
I think it's lunchtime, Ghanaian jollof. It's that time. How did you like it? Was it the first time having Ghanaian jollof?
No, I've had jollof before.
Niger or Ghanaian?
I think Senegalese jollof is the best.
It's the best one?
Yeah. The Niger and the Ghanaian, okay, ones are all there.
Is that where we're going next year for 2024?
I wish, but I don't know.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you for listening to iAfrican Bites. Please share your feedback with us on our socials. On Twitter at iAfrican. On LinkedIn at iAfrican.com. And check out our other podcasts, The Tefo Mohapi Show, Take Legal Matters, and The Lead Creator, on all podcast streaming platforms. And also make sure to head over to www.iafrican.com. That is iafrican.com/radio. And subscribe for notifications. iAfrican Bites is an iAfrican Media original show, produced by Nzalo Mbangana and content producer and host by Don Kotokwane.